Hi, welcome to On Writing, your fortnightly podcast on online writing communities and the terrible advice they give. And happy holidays. This is a Christmas episode. Just kidding. It's a Shakespeare episode. My name is Sean. Yeah. He, him.
I'm Chad. He, him, and we've already broken into the eggnog. So,
I'm MJ, and she, her, and I have to have coconut eggnog because I have problems with lactose. Mm-hmm.
And,
lactose, yes.
A guest who can't be here in any way except back-to-back WW2 losses says hi, Bob, to the podcast. Okay. But we all also have permission to get drunk and start arguments at Christmas dinner if we want.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've held on to that card for ages. They get really mad when you start saying, like, well, what literature have you read on it? Oh, you just read the news? Oh, okay, well, hang on. I got some book recommendations for you. And then they can't really do anything about that. Well, it feels wrong. It's like, well, have you consulted the scholarship on it? Like, hang on. Let's find some answers. But yes.
Today, I like to go deeper than that. And I like to lean over and go, you see those tapes floating in the news? You know, Nixon was probably bicurious in college, and we'll just let that Christmas conversation unspool in the direction in which it must.
Oh, that reminds me of, like, the greatest fucking quote of all time, where it's like, I'm gonna explain he, him lesbians to my nana with dementia if I don't get a Switch for Christmas this year. But
that's,
yes,
actually pretty good.
William fucking Shakespeare. So this is, Shakespeare is actually one of the inciting incidents of this podcast, because way back in the day, the genesis of this podcast was Chad, being a good and moral person, would join online writing communities. I was too busy, you know, reading and stuff like that to, like, ever join these things. And Chad was like, I think you could help out at one of these a lot. And so I did. And I had a terrible time there. A fucking absolutely terrible time there.
But Sean's also leaving out a few characteristics, such as, Sean, I think you could help. Really? How? And then I dropped the bloody pulp of a person that I had previously been quote-unquote helping with, like, a tire iron. And I went, I don't know, figure something out. I think he needs, like, pressure put on the wound or something.
There's some kind of fucking tourniquet somewhere, right? Who knows? But this led to when Chad getting banned from that particular server. And secondly, I was invited to a whole bunch of other servers because people were like, wow, you're so insightful. You're so smart. Join my special secret breakaway server where you don't have to talk to these morons. Only smart people are going to get invited to my breakaway server. And, what happened was someone said, oh my God, I'm so grateful we're in a little more academic, a little more together server. Let's talk about some actually interesting topics, like the often discussed in academia, was Shakespeare Shakespeare? I'm like, no, it's not an academic topic.
All right, I'm like, just going to interrupt you right there, Chief.
Yeah, I'm just going to, okay, nope, not flag on the play, okay. Let's reset it, right? Go back to the line. This is football, okay? Like, put the sticks back, put your horse away, right? Like, please try and play the sport we're playing. And they're like, what do you mean? I just talked about it in my English class. And I'm like, you discussed it in the college English class? And they're like, no, I discussed it in my a middle school English class 3 years ago. And I'm like, dear listener, you cannot see my face, but I'm staring into the middle distance. Right now, I'm looking like Godzilla has eaten my family. That's how I'm looking right now. Because, yeah, sure, you debated it in fucking middle school. Middle school is where they're like, okay, don't worry, there are three states of matter. It'll be fine. And then you're like, oh no, holy shit. I feel smart because I knew there was plasma. I don't know what a Bose-Einstein condensate is, right?
Let's also be realistic about what middle school is. It's also where they're like, okay, so which ones are we writing off and sending to the lithium mines? Which ones can be coaxed out of eating their pencils? Mm-hmm, and which ones will actually... Okay, we're going to put this into a subcategory of we'll get to high school. Now we got to break that down into which ones are going to be fucking parents in high school.
Yeah, like, let's fucking break this shit down. So, yeah, and like, the notion that a debate that you had in school makes it an academic debate is like, oh boy. Because a lot of academic debate, if you're in an academic debate team, isn't fucking... like an academic debate subject, because fucking academic debate is resolved by like, hey, we've got evidence, not like rhetoric, right? That rhetoric usually plays very little of an answer in a lot of these this discourses. And in Shakespeare, there's no Shakespeare scholar who has like even a fucking question about who fucking Shakespeare was. There's no one who says Kit Marlowe did it. There's no one who says it was a random fucking lord. There's absolutely no one who proposes like A, the existence of the fucking Stargate, and B, that like it was the incestuous son of like Queen Elizabeth, right? I think that was what Anonymous was about. Does anyone remember?
I still stand firm that you're right. It wasn't Kit Marlowe. It was John Hurt cosplaying as Chris Marlowe. Yes. That little scene left a huge impact on me. It also wasn't Francis Bacon or any noble named after a breakfast food.
Mm-hmm. Well, the fucking thing is like, oh, no, he didn't want to write it. He needed to be a fucking pseudonym for a noble because a noble didn't want to be disgraced with it. Bull and shit. Like half the nobles and fucking kings were like, yeah, I'm going to write my fucking book. Right. Here's my fucking novel that you all have to read now.
Yeah. Right? Then they opened up their shitty Discord servers and they made their shitty World of Warcraft guilds join their shitty Discord, the shitty writing Discord server, or else they wouldn't get DKP.
I feel like this is hitting a little close to home for Marjorie right now.
No, but what's also great about that, though, is on like the Francis Bacon note, is that they're like, he had to assume a pseudonym in order to write plays, because nobles couldn't write plays. That's why it was Francis Bacon, because he wrote plays.
Yeah, did you not like say the sequence of fucking words you said?
Yeah, we may have a blue screen on that one, buddy.
Yeah. So,
also can't confuse like a debate in a place where there are books to a debate that involves writing books, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah. And the authorship question is fundamentally a bad question because there's no reason for it. Right. It's like flat eartherism, where it's not actually that old. It's just people in like relative modernity being like, damn, I wonder, could it have been someone else? When you look at his contemporaries and his immediate contemporaries, including John Milton, John Milton's not confused about how Shakespeare is. And John Milton was like alive at the same fucking time when he writes like the elegy for fucking Shakespeare. That's like, he makes us wood. And it's like, haha, that's very funny. John Milton. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Borges. Shout out to Milton. But the reason the authorship question is like fundamentally uninteresting is because who gives a fuck? We have the text. What's the line from Noises Off, Marjorie? It's like, the author in his infinite wisdom has decided to provide us with the text.
I love that movie. I play. Yeah,
well, that perfect. Also, that does coincide too with something that was popped to me in middle school, which was all like, and there are so many mysteries about his life. I'm like, they're not mysteries, dude. Like, how much do you know about anybody that lived in that era?
Yeah, how much like, do you know about your fucking like cousins or whatever, right? Like, what are they up to right now? I bet you could fucking answer where they're gonna be in 2 days or yesterday, depending on when you're listening to this. But like, you're not like fucking tracking them. You don't know that they fucking got Chick-fil-A today or something, right? That it's not like known and knowable what they're doing. And sure, there's some vague mysteries, but we have as more documentation for this motherfucker than the average dude who lived in Elizabethan England.
The authorship debate is not about, well, the debate that's worth having that is had constantly is the who is the young man or WH in the sonnets. And like, this is actually literally debated among like, is it someone he made up? Is it himself? Is it so-and-so?
Okay, there? I'll just let the cat out of the bag. It's me.
It was you all along.
Yeah, it's always me, been me. Chad. I'm a combination between Dio and the Shibe Unu or whatever the hell that dog is called in the terminal in Silent Hill 2.
Fuck yeah, it was you. It was you all along. Bark, 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 bark.
Okay, that actually does, you deserve to know this if you don't play 90s horror games. The game Silent Hill is like an artistic, psychological, ghoulish supernatural horror that's basically about the denial, guilt, and trauma of a dude that murdered his fucking girlfriend and walking around with her corpse.
Silent Hill 2 is. Silent Hill 1 is a fairly playable mass.
Yes, but one of the endings you can get in Silent Hill 2 in this deeply disturbing trauma is that you kick open a door and a Shiba dog is at a control panel, and you discover he was the one behind the horror the whole time.
He was running it like an amusement park, and that plays a weird little version of the theme in dog barks.
Right? Mm-hmm. 90s horror video games were weird. Like, they understood they were really scary, so they wanted to find a way to really do some pressure release. Like, in Resident Evil 2, the evil corporation comes and tries to steal the bioweapon that causes all the zombies. And one of the modes you can get is called Hunk Mode, where you play the special forces stealing the bioweapon. But a harder to unlock game is called Tofu Mode, which is identical to Hunk Mode, except you're a giant piece of tofu with a knife.
Fucking phenomenal. I love PlayStation 1 games. We have declined. I'm like a return guy, but only for the PS1 era, right? Like, give me some fucking Twisted Metal, give me some fucking Spyro, and we are set, baby. Let's do this thing. I feel like we are fundamentally at a certain level in nostalgia podcast until we push like every single book written this year, right? So that's not exactly true. We don't really advocate for 90s books, yeah.
No, we wax poetic about like 90s video games and 90s movies, but like only books published in the last 4 years.
Or sometimes past it's a little bit longer years. Margin because like fifth years. Season and stuff, but mostly from like living authors, because we're like, fuck yeah, living authors. That's great. I love it when an author is alive and you can like respect their works before they're in the fucking ground.
What did you think of Where the Crawdads Sing?
Where the Crawdads Sing. Wait, that's the I haven't seen the movie. I only got I DNF'd the book. Because, I mean, it was, like, really fucking, like, thank God for this collaboration of magical Negroes to project me through to my, like, successful character apotheosis.
I have a way more interesting subject matter for a song called Where the Crawdads, or for a book called Where the Crawdads Sing, than whatever the hell coming-of-age murder mystery novel this is. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ms. Owens. Where the Crawdads Sing is where all the alligator snoots are currently sticking out of the marsh because it's frozen over. And so the alligators literally stick their little snouts out of places where it's freezing and then hibernate until they warm up. And there's actually a job of a dude whose job, if it gets too cold, is to go out and basically rub the snoots.
Oh my God, I want that job. I've never wanted a job so bad. Marjorie, why do you show me job applications for stupid things like finance editor and like data entry admin for like $20,000 a month? Like, I could be an alligator. Yeah.
I could be a snoot warmer.
It's like equity partner. Bullshit. I want to rub alligator snoot. That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
No, but absolutely. Only if it's sticking through the crystalline marsh.
No, I'll fucking do that shit recreationally. You can't stop me. But that's why God gave me two hands to give one to the gator. I feel like that's one way to get a cult power, right? That's how you untruly get the Cajun mysticism, is you fucking lose a hand to a gator. But yes, I guess that's the next step we should go on. This is kind of interlocked. I'm not sure the order in which we should do this because they're all out of a tier. But like, is Shakespeare elite writing or is it like, I'm not sure of a specific word I'm reaching for.
Is it plebeian or patrician?
Yeah. That's the dialectic here. And the answer is porque no los dos, especially because Shakespeare did not write one thing and you shouldn't read his whole oeuvre as like a single text. Like MJ.
Yeah, that is the funniest thing. And it's all the kind of almost assumption that it's all like Shakespeare, the guy that wrote that one about Venice. Loved that Venice thing. Yeah. What's he up to now, I wonder?
Yeah.
Calcifying?
Yeah, well, turning us all to wood, right? Like, that's what Milton said he does forever. But yes, Marjorie, is Comedy of Errors an elite product?
No, not Comedy of Errors.
Is As You Like It an elite product?
Yes.
Is Richard III an elite product?
Yes.
Is fucking... Romeo and Juliet an elite product?
Yeah.
Which ones are not elite products?
Well, Comedy of Errors is just a nightmare. Like, it's just trash. Yeah, it's really not a good play. Like, it's not taught very often because it's not a very good play. Like, I think even Richard II is better than Comedy of Errors, but like, that's good. And like, Henry IV Part 2? Like, you could say Henry the Fourth Part Two, like some, and like maybe King John. Like, they're not read and not like performed very often, except for like those places that do all of the Shakespeare plays as a thing.
Is there a Henry the Fourth Part Two?
There is.
Is there a reason not called colon Henry Forever?
I'm thinking it should be called actually Lightning Returns, but they did Final Fantasy X, some of them.
God, too fast, this, too furious.
This idea of Henry the Fourth 2, where like Henry fucking finds like, I don't know, the fucking Archbishop of Canterbury, but like as a kid in a shopping mall, and they like go together and they like destroy the French crown or whatever, going there, now England will always, thanks to Salic law, take over France. But it turns out the future cannot be changed, and thus Henry the Fifth is their Terminator salvation.
I'm trying to think of the Terminator thing played on like fucking monarchial trumpets, right? Fucking like, honk, 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 honk.
Yeah, but it's great when they come out with like that parade brass, and they're like honk, 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 honk.
Fuck. But yeah, my question wasn't elite as in terms of quality, but elite as in like of very little concern to the commons, that it's so bad or is pretty much primarily to appeal to his boss and their recently published history manifesto.
Yeah, well, I mean, the most direct appeals for patronage were his actual poems and not his plays. Like, mm-hmm. the plays he does do, like, Midsummer Night's Dream is totally, like, I love you, Queen Elizabeth, you're super rad, Queen Elizabeth. There's a whole lot about, like, virginity and virgin queens in there that, like, if you study Midsummer Night's Dream, it is, like, a very pro-Elizabeth play.
The idea of him writing a sonnet called, if I could hang out at Windsor a little more often, it'd be called, that province would actually, or that colony would actually be called, Only Did It Once Ya.
But also we mentioned Midsummer Night's Dream. How many dick jokes are in Midsummer Night's Dream?
It's all dick jokes all the way down,
wall to wall, literally.
The Silent Hill, when it says do you want to go down in the hole, like that's all the holes all the way down, dicks all the way down.
Yeah. It also gets a lot of mileage about the fact that he is an ass. That's just a joke that happens throughout the whole thing. And again, this is the one that's most elite. Like, you know who's the best person around? My boss. Check her out. She's great. Loves everyone, but is fundamentally virginal. No king can touch him despite their nobility. Look how cool she is.
Yeah. Loves everyone platonically.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And this is kind of the split, is that, yes, he was writing for the commons to get paid, but he was also writing for the elites to get paid. And you can read a lot of his shit about like subversion and stuff, but a lot of what he did was monarchical dick sucking.
Oh, like even as a guy that doesn't have any academic understanding of Shakespeare, like, well, OK, I digress. I've seen Shakespeare in Love a few times. And I'm pretty sure that's a documentary, and I'm pretty sure Ralph Fiennes just was Shakespeare the entire time.
I'll buy it.
And I'm pretty sure that The Tempest was inspired by Goop.
No, actually, The Tempest was inspired by a little show called Gundam. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, okay, so Sean is a big believer in the idea that time doesn't reel. That's very much like a perception of terrestrial earthlings. So, you know what? Under the Sean thesis, why the fuck couldn't William Shakespeare have been influenced by Gundam?
I mean, I see a lot of influence of Ranma One Half on Midsummer Night's Dream. I mean,
well,
don't you?
We're also forgetting that like Warhammer 40K inspired both of them because who had the stratagem, the burning of Prospero? Thousand Suns. Thank you very much. Go.
Okay. Yeah. No, that settles it. But Marjorie, what is the best of the Ranma OVAs episodes?
Well, I mean, I think the second movie is my favorite. The one where they get into a contest or two to marry this person who has this magical spring water that one boy slash girl wants for a cure to stop being boy slash girl and just remain boy.
And, I mean, we can obviously see the influence of that on like Winter's Tale, right? But but specifically, I'm saying the one about the jewel of confusion.
Oh, the contrary jewel of with yeah. shampoo, where she like gets flips the jewel and she loves Ranma and doesn't love Ranma.
That's literally the plot of Midsummer Night's Dream. Case closed, right? That
I'm dying at the fact that this all tied together with Warhammer legitimately being the influence on the Tempest. By going, he wrote for the commoners to pay rent, and he wrote for the nobles to pay for his Warhammer army.
I mean, we do have a lot of like old little wooden models, but none from Shakespeare. We only have stuff about him in that regard. So like he was elite or he was writing for the commons is a false dichotomy. Everyone was writing for both. Because if you're putting on a play, you're putting on for both. That's just like a fact, right?
Well, and if you're writing poetry and especially sonnets, like that was a thing that noble people did, and like Shakespeare's dad, like going through the whole process of getting the coat of arms and stuff, like you would call it coterie poetry, that they would circulate these small pamphlets of sonnets like among rich dudes. And so it was like
coterie poetry. He wrote for fucking vampires.
Yes, and one of them was Kit Marlowe.
Obviously.
Oh shit, it all comes around. Motherfucker.
Also, this is one of these moments where it's like China oldest and most profound culture, because like, yeah, we were doing that shit in like 400 BCE. Come on. What the fuck is also, wrong with you guys?
Yeah. It also kills me that real fast I Googled coterie to see if it brought up anything that wasn't related to vampires. And unfortunately, the top hit after the dictionary definition is related to vampires.
You're done.
Coterie diapers and baby wipes. High performance cleaning.
Okay, shit. That's a weird brand name for a fucking diaper company. But yes, he wrote.
And he jumped on this fad like super late. Like all the rich dudes did it before Shakespeare. And Shakespeare was like super late in the sonnet game. Like he came in there and he's like, it's still happening, right? Like, and it really wasn't.
With like Milton, right? Is that he was like, sonnets are dumb because Shakespeare ruined them, right? By the way, Milton was very like anti-Shakespeare, weirdly. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not surprising considering he didn't write any like religious plays, and Milton, like every fucking thing he wrote had a little bit of Jesus in it, right? Mm-hmm. Even his like fucking essays were like, look, I'm thinking Jesus would want me to be able to publish without running it by the government, okay? And you're like, I don't think Jesus actually would have an opinion about that, Milton.
This is where he's holding up. He's like holding up a book that's waiting to be bound. So I guess it's really just a manuscript. So holding up and going, render unto Parliament what is Parliament's, and render unto God what is God's.
Yeah. But this the discussion of whether it's elite or plebeian of the polis also leads to our next question, which is Shakespeare that good? Is he overhyped? And the answer is, he is that fucking good. Like, if you feel like he wasn't that good, you're fucking wrong, because he is a fucking genius. Like, this is a fucking, like, at a certain level, I wish he wasn't as good as he was, because he's so fucking good. It's upsetting.
I ran into somebody who unironically accused him of tryharding.
What the fuck?
Because of the language that he used. And I'm like, the language that he used. He's like, yeah, you tried to make it all fucking biblical sounding. He's just tryharding. And I'm like, my brother in Christ, this is how you talked in 1578.
God, don't inflict like Marlowe's Faust on them.
Hang on, this person got weirder, by the way, because they were like, no, the word you existed in the 1500s. And I'm like, yeah, it's in Shakespeare's plays. We continue. And he's all... What he cites was an episode, I don't know if you guys remember this show, from the History Channel, Conquest.
What?
And he goes, I don't. And he goes, on Conquest, they showed that as far back as the 1300s, they used U-bows. And I'm like, this is the most educated stupidity I've ever heard in my life. Like, you've got sources to back your unfathomable stupidity.
You're on like a level 4 mountain and river thing. You're on whatever's beyond that. You're on a beach or something, just sitting there confused, drinking a fucking pina colada.
You're right. The word you has existed since the 1300s.
You fucking got me. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. You got me.
I like, can't I can't believe you cited you, Bose. this is up there with... Oh, it just clicked what he was saying, did it?
Yeah. I was like, yeah. What? How did it... What? And then it was,
yeah. Yeah, he heard they used U-bows, and he thought it was a, here, U-bow.
Well, it's Me-bow? Like English wasn't yes. codified as a written language, so it's all one word before you change the spelling. Homonyms were really annoying back then, right? Do you mean homophones? Shut the fuck up, right? Oh, God.
Yeah, but yes. this reminds me a lot of a dude that I used to work with back in video games who was so charmingly stupid, but he was so nice, but he was so fucking stupid that one day he wanted me to give him a pop quiz to prove he wasn't stupid. And I'm like, I think the matter is settled.
You're done. Yeah. Ask me anything. Bro, ask me anything. I'll prove I'm not dumb. Okay.
Right. So I'm giving him the most basic geography pop quiz I possibly can. And he can't. He's scoring like a commendable 60. So in some school districts in Southern California, it passes. until I'm like, okay, what country is Ontario in? And he goes, oh, this is easy. He goes, California.
No, and I'm like, please.
And I'm like, easy there, Gavin Newsom. Okay, I said country, not state.
And, raising the fucking two-headed bear flag, right? Yeah, like, yeah, MCR, but then goes, motherfucker, we're going for the dam.
But then he justifies and goes, no, Ontario isn't California. I just picked up my grandma from the airport there.
Oh, okay. That's really funny. Yeah, that's like, great.
This is a benevolent level of stupidity.
It's like, what country is Paris in? It's like USA because Ohio. God, what? Okay, but MJ, for serious, for realsy, why is Shakespeare so elite? Why does he rock so hard?
Well, I personally really, like, my opinions are going to vary from, like, someone who hasn't done the intense amount of, like, reading and grading of Shakespeare stuff. Like, mm-hmm. So I have my opinions of which things I like and why I like them. And I think probably the best example of him as, like, an elite poet is actually Venus and Adonis, which is not a play and you're not going to see performed probably. And it is very sexy and very awesome. But, like, I think Shakespeare is best seen and not read if you're talking about the plays. Like, but if you're going to talk about the poems and why he's an elite read, it's Venus and Adonis all the way.
I'm laughing at the idea of a live performance of it with MJ qualifying. This is actually not, this is the only role where when he performed it live, he didn't star in it. And then she pulls out this bill. Where it's like, okay, such and such is Adonis, such and such is Venus. Oh, William Shakespeare as Priapus. Okay.
Okay, dick jokes aside, fundamental, yep. Quantum biblical dick jokes aside, right?
Yeah, but very Shakespearean, I might add.
Yeah.
Our friend absolutely liked the dick butt meme.
Yes. He also, there's also a whole discourse about, like, what, who he played in various performances. And I think there is a question about his quality, because there is variable quality in Shakespeare, because Shakespeare is anthologized very weirdly. Marjorie, autism subject matter expert. Shakespeare's first folio, the fucking bad one.
Yeah, it was after he was dead that it was published altogether for the first time. Like, if... And this is the thing about Shakespeare, is that we have so many records of, like, the stuff that came out during his lifetime in the, like, quarto editions, and you can go find them and read them, like, OG, like, 15 whatever bullshit. Like, you can't see, like, what it looked like back then. So
no, he was, William Shakespeare probably wasn't real. Dude, I like, literally found, like, when he checked into a government office. Have you read that? Nah, I didn't search that far, so fuck it.
Yeah,
we're not entering new evidence. We're past discovery for this court hearing. What the fuck?
Yeah. And the quarto versions can be kind of shit, actually. Like, kind of.
Well, there's like, if you are like me and you had to, like, do a million classes as a TA for a bazillion Shakespeare courses, you will have read all the versions of Hamlet, which is a first and second quarto and first folio, second folio. And then when you read an edition, a modern edition of Hamlet, the like editors of that edition will tell you which source or sources they're using. And it's usually not the first quarto because that is the bad quarto. And they think either somebody was trying to remember the play that didn't actually have the script but saw it was one option.
Yeah, they were cinema sensing it. They were just like, what happened in that thing? Oh, yeah, that probably happened.
I love the idea of a historical record of Empire Strikes Back. Of it saying, getting the quote wrong, going, Luke, I'm your father.
I'm your dad, kid.
Well, and then the response is, and then Luke, that sucks.
But no, that's basically the speed of it, right? Where you're like, the record of a guy who was there, or maybe like one of the actors who had performed it a while ago and didn't remember everyone's lines, but remembered his own lines pretty good, right? Yeah, we don't have like, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, but the and I've seen, unfortunately, like, because one of the assignments that I had in one of these courses, I think I did more than once, actually, like 50 plus students in each time. Like, you had to take a same passage, if it existed, in all four versions, and the fourth one could be whatever modern one you wanted. And I have read, like, each snippet of, like, Hamlet and four, like, all of them, all, like, over and over again.
Yeah. What? You say you're like your understanding of this shit is like limited or you're not a scholar, MJ, but like you have literally read more. You've been exposed to more Shakespeare education than I would say any other human on earth, because the only other people would be more would be the actual teachers listening to their own lectures. And we know they don't do that. We know for sure they don't do that. Right.
Well, and possibly Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, but
I literally will link anyone to his sonnet readings. I think he's phenomenal.
I enjoy the thought of like William Shakespeare's ghost going, "You've read more of this than I have, lady. Give it a fucking rest."
Easy now, come on.
There's actually this jazz song called 20 something that I loved when I was a 20 something. And there's like this line that says, "I'm an expert on Shakespeare and that's a hell of a lot, but the world don't need scholars as much as I thought." And I have actually found the opposite to be true because I am still getting paid to write about Shakespeare. I just turned in a thing on Shakespeare for my job, like one of the sonnets. And it's like, it is the most profitable thing I know about because everybody had to take the Shakespeare when they were in college. And so I had tons of students.
There's also so many people who like, think that it's going to be easy, and then they get in there and they go, oh, there are academic questions of beyond whether or not he's Sir Francis Bacon shit.
Yeah, it turns out like fucking imperialism in the Tempest is like a fucking, you can write your fucking whole life career on that God, shit, right?
But I'm calling back, it's killing me. The thought popped in my head of a ghost appearing to MJ of William Shakespeare, and he gives his spiel, and MJ goes, wait, Will, and he goes, yes, and she goes, you're John Montague, fourth Earl of Sandwich? That doesn't line up with the timelines at all.
Weren't you dead? I was in hiding because Kit Marlowe turned me into a vampire. Ah, fuck, it makes sense now. Shit. Okay.
Well, seasonally speaking, we're about to come into the actual date of Twelfth Night here soon, and Twelfth Night was the one I wrote the most about. I wrote like the 60-page research paper on it, and when I was an undergrad. Doing a fellowship at the Newberry Library, hype that was so much fun.
Okay, fucking victory lap over here, but yeah.
Yeah, but like, but no, like the 12th night is the one I'm gonna say is like why he's elite, and not everyone is going to agree with this because people are gonna say Hamlet, and I'm like, no, I know why Hamlet is not elite, and I also know why Hamlet is elite. Like, and I
this
told my
this is why fucking this is we're a strongly anti-Hamlet podcast, and you know why? Because it invented hauntology, and there are much more popular and profitable podcasts who talk about that shit all the time.
I'm super pro Hamlet, especially after my friend from your guys's neck of the woods accidentally all of Derrida trying to figure out what the hell I was talking about with hauntology. That was the funniest quote I've ever heard, where she's all like, I read this to try to get literary deep reads, and all I got is that Shakespeare's or Hamlet's dad's ghost is going to beat me up if I put sanctions on Iran.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and that's what's being invoked in 6 Feet Under.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, what's the fucking question? It all makes sense. Yeah. Spectres of Marx is a fucking seminal work. What does seminal mean in this context? Who the fuck knows?
Well, but like, for instance, my mom has never read Hamlet, and she's never seen Hamlet, and she's seen a few like Shakespeare movies I've subjected her to, like The Midsummer Night's Dream with Stanley Tucci as Puck. Totally, really cute.
Romeo plus Juliet, Hot Fuzz featuring a stage play adaptation of Romeo plus Juliet.
Hot Fuzz choosing to do a stage play of that specifically. I had to rewatch the movie because I spent the rest of the movie laughing at that fact.
No, I didn't get it. I didn't get it for years. Hot Fuzz was one of my favorite movies. And I think it was when, like, MJ and I were watching it, like, literally last year, I, like, stood up and was like, they're not, this isn't Romeo and Juliet. This is Romeo plus Juliet. Like, yep. It just completely missed me, like, in terms of the shittiness. Like,
yeah.
Oh, but like, and so I told my mom, and she somehow, unfortunately, went to a Barnes & Noble and found an edition of Shakespeare that she thought was pretty, but it has no notes in it whatsoever. And so I said, look, you have to just watch Hamlet. Like, you can't read Hamlet if you've not, like, read it before. Like, you have to watch it. And so I sent her to, I think it's the Royal Shakespeare Company or the BBC edition with David Tennant as Hamlet and Patrick Stewart as Claudius.
Why would you unleash your mother on the internet looking up Shakespeare BBC?
Oh, I sent her the link directly.
Okay.
But yeah, I also had to send her an annotated, like, copy of the sonnets with really good notes in them, because if you're trying to read these without notes, like, the poetry, you need notes. You need someone to, like, explain shit to you, because it doesn't, like, and it's not easier. Like, if you read Renaissance prose that isn't Shakespeare, that's just, like, paragraphs, quote unquote, like, they're not like paragraphs you have seen. It's much, much more complicated to read Renaissance prose than it is to read, like, Shakespeare's plays that are in blank verse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just being fucking correctly paginated is fucking good, right? Where you're like, please, man, don't make me turn the page every 15 fucking seconds. Don't make it one big block of text.
I don't act. So this isn't Renaissance. This is more Enlightenment era. But after reading Barry Lyndon, I don't actually believe Stanley Kubrick read Barry Lyndon. Not because of the faithfulness or lack thereof of the film, but that's an unreadable piece of fucking shit. Like,
I don't believe anyone has read that. Yeah.
Yeah, this dude, like, he starts writing a novel and then just completely forgets that he doesn't work for 23andMe.
I forgot, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, the bloodline, I mean, that's also true of, like, everything written in the fucking, like, Renaissance and, like, then start of the Enlightenment. Considering fucking, there's, like, a 5-page aside wherein Merlin's ghost is talking about the narrator's patron, who is actually the closest to Jesus and the true line of, like, Charlemagne and also God, right?
Yeah, some of that shit gets, like, really weirdly blasphemous, because they're like, you know how we know that Jesus was the Son of God? How? When Charlemagne laid his hands on him and healed him. And it's like, whoa, that got fucking weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do always love the medieval and Renaissance thing of, like, this great artist, great work. And then they have, like, all these wonderful images. And then they have one that's just, like, their two patrons literally shaking hands with Jesus. And you're like, dude, this sucks. Like, it really does suck that this has to go in the gallery with all your other shit. Especially because when they're, like, a famous, like, fresco and, like, large work painter. And then they make, like, a fucking, like, 2x4. Like, it's just a normal size canvas of, like, yeah, and here's Ted and Nancy shaking hands with the Messiah. Okay,
unironically, if I have, like, a Raphael at my disposal and I'm getting one of these portraits, it's me and Big J knocking back Panera Bread lemonade.
No, I thought it would be you, like, pushing the fucking layup and Jesus just, like, dunking, right?
Like, well, I mean, that too. Like, what the hell's wrong with you people? There's so many opportunities here. This dude can paint the Lord our God doing anything, and you chose shaking hands?
Yeah. Just, like, high-fiving. This, I think, is Shakespeare a fucking phenomenal writer? Yes, he fucking destroyed the English language and rebuilt it, right? Like, most of the conventions of the English language were made so Shakespeare could get his shit in meter, right? That he, like, beat that shit with a rubber hose until it cooperated, and it made the language, like, 18 times better, which just makes it so much funnier that, like, Milton is being such an asshole about it, because Milton uses the Shakespearean fucking mechanisms to write his fucking poems, and he wouldn't be able to write them if he didn't have access to, like, contractions and, like, the, Shakespearean, like, chiasmus and stuff. So, well, yeah.
It brings me to my favorite thing about... Now, MJ may think that I'm wrong about this, but I'm right about everything, so I must be right about this, too. Chaucer one day went, that's enough women I'd Harvey Weinstein for now. I'm going to invent a language for English people. And he sat down and he wrote a really shitty fucking language. And then Shakespeare was surrounded by all these people dying at the River Thames because they're hearing Chaucer's English language. And he's like, well, it does give us an identity independent, truly, of both the Germans and the French. But he pronounces root rute, and that's fucking lame.
And I'm right? not down with this knicked shit. That's... for anyone who's mad at English, because the word knight, okay, that's been cured. Knight is the best possible version. Because it wasn't that, like, why did they throw in those extra letters? Not true. What happened is that those letters were fucking pronounced. I will say bring back Thorn. Bring back Thorn, okay?
They're Thorn taking is me so away useful, language. Yeah.
Oh, the letter. The letter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what the hell do they call the one that that's the A and E, but somebody really needed to save space, so turn them into one?
Oh, that one doesn't fucking matter. I don't give a shit about that one.
No, I fucking love that one, because I gotta tell you, fantasy would be a lot more exciting if we called them, like, elves, right? And they were, like, Anglo-Saxon and shit.
That's awesome. You know,
they came out with their hauberks and their fucking Norman helms, and they're like, we are elves. Show us to the monastery. Yeah. And no one gets the funny magic. We won't open the stinky fish.
Yeah. It looks like Wikipedia calls it an ash, which is dumb, because it should be a thorn or a long F. Those are the only ones that we allow.
I'm going to call it an Edward the Confessor A.
or just like a Games Workshop copyrighted A, right? But yes, speaking of like fucking Games Workshop, I think this raises another question where it's like, is Shakespeare woke? Because this has been fucking hotly contested, and it's the weirdest fucking question, because I mean, no and yes, because he's a fucking guy writing in the fucking Elizabethan era, not Victorian, Elizabethan. I caught myself. I almost said he was Edwardian earlier.
Well, and Jacobian, to be fair.
Oh, Christ. Okay, fine. We don't
Jacobians cause all those problems.
Yep, those are the problem plays, the Jacobian ones.
Okay, so during the fucking William Shakespeare, Heon era author, right, was fucking writing these shits, and some of them are pretty fucking woke, but some of them are fucking not. But here's the thing: teaching of Shakespeare has become like an ontologically like not woke thing, because everyone got big mad that UCLA was trying to not teach Shakespeare for a while. Two facts: UCLA offers stupid degrees, okay? They don't have like a fucking business administration degree or a business undergrad degree, sorry. They only have economics, and it's like economics is a dumb degree. I want to be able to do math when I get out of this. And it's like, no, you have to learn about fucking like baby's first like elasticity curve for four fucking years. Econ is
yeah,
a fucking
but you get a hat discipline. With a Kodiak on it.
Okay, true. Secondly, there's a big reason for that. And as MJ mentioned, she was teaching at the number one ranked English university in this fucking country and the world with regard to Shakespeare. They require you to take Shakespeare classes for all English majors. And there's a lot of English majors at the fucking Englishest institution in the world. Mm-hmm. We have the biggest building, and it's the most haunted building, and we say it's full of ghosts.
MJ, you taught at the University of Phoenix Online?
You know it, baby.
Yeah, Azusick College of the Canyons, baby. Alumni every year since fucking 2012, right? But no, the thing about that is, if there's a lot of fucking undergrads and they all have to take a Shakespeare class, you start to run into a problem, because you need to teach a lot of fucking Shakespeare classes. And you will inflict general ed on all your teachers, right? You will make them all teach like the R1As and R1Bs. Like, do you know how to write essay? Please God, tell me you know how to write essay. We're literally just going over shit you learned in high school. I'm begging you, write an essay good. But Shakespeare, you can't just grab any idiot and have them teach it. And the thing about Shakespeare scholars is that generally they are old as the fucking hills, right? And not the greatest pedagogues, I would say.
Oh, they vary so greatly. I've had some like phenomenal professors who are just like would write these beautiful rubrics to grade, and like were funny and like lectured really beautifully and was like really engaging and had wonderful office hours. And then I've seen some who were just like phoning it in because they knew a much more famous Shakespeare scholar, and they would just name drop that Shakespeare scholar over and
all
over
the
again.
Time. Yeah.
All the time. Like, that person was not very good.
This kind of links back to middle school being ground zero for every bad Shakespeare take you've ever had or heard. Mm-hmm.
because we wasted an entire hour that could have inched us closer to those legally dubious tits in the Romeo and Juliet movie that we were watching. We wasted an entire hour discussing whether or not Shakespeare was actually gay.
Mm.
And I'm like, I don't think that, like, this question is going to be solved in, like, your English one classroom.
Yeah. Well, the other fucking thing about it is, like, we have actually no idea. Like, obviously, we can say fucking Kinsey scale. Sexuality is a continuum, and we know Kit Marlowe was a vampire, so, I mean, possibly, right? But the bigger thing is, like, does it matter? Like, because he wrote a lot of fucking super queer text.
Well, what matters in this case is that, like, and we're still debating over, like, the young man again. Like, we don't know who this guy is. And he could have been, like, the sonnets could have been just all made up. That is one theory, that they're just, like, one big performance piece, and he never he actually used his was
fucking imagination.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so even if it's an imagined relationship between this poet who is not him and a young man, he is turning all of the conventions that were used for women into stuff for a young man. It's innovative. It's so, like, it takes all the shit that came before, and we made it the lady business, and now it is the young man.
Yeah, it's like Rumi being like, God, I want to fuck God. And everyone's like, Rumi, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I just want God to fuck me, okay?
There's a hilarious thought of somebody walking in, probably Ben Affleck, walking in and going, Will, that sonnet seems a little gay. What about writing about a woman? He's all like, there's nothing left to explore in the straight ocean. It's been mapped.
Well, the straight blonde ocean, at least.
Yeah. So, like, the corollary with, like, Shakespearean wokeness is that, like, I know Ben Shapiro got big mad because UCLA was talking about not teaching Shakespeare and just teaching a bunch of other stuff. UCLA was still requiring you to take the full sequence of, like, historical shit. So you needed to fucking have a class that had Beowulf in it. You had to have take a class that had Moby Dick in it. And you had to have a fucking class that had, like, 20th century shit, right?
It's, well, why would, like, UCLA do that? That was my, that and A Rose for Emily were like, and The Scarlet Letter were basically like my junior high school literary curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, there is a lot of repetition because you're like, okay, you read this thing, now you're gonna read it again, right? Because, like, I did fucking Shakespeare in elementary school because I went to a very weird culty school. That's just a fact. And then I revisited it in college, right? And the fact is, like, you can learn something twice because it turns out you were not very smart when you were in middle school. Sorry.
Just like you can watch RoboCop and be like, Alex Murphy is in that machine, and then you can watch it again later and go, the machine thinks it's Alex Murphy.
Yes, the only correct take on RoboCop. But this is, like, purely a logistical problem, that they need to teach a lot of people a lot of shit, and there's, like, not enough Shakespeare scholars that they're willing to pay, because they're not going to fucking, like, there's a specter that has been haunting this podcast, and it's not the specter of Marx, it's not the specter of Hamlet's dad, it's the specter of Stephen fucking Greenblatt, okay? Stephen Greenblatt is a fucking genius, and, like, not the one who invented the historic methods of criticism, but, like, the one who fucking made them work. Because his shit, like, Will in the World, is the fucking work of it, historicist criticism. And, like, if we're going to quote one person about, like, I want to know about Shakespeare, but I don't want to read all these plays and poems, read Stephen Greenblatt, and you're done. That's it. He's the guy, okay? And there's other scholars on there that are of interest, but you might go in there and you might come out thinking some weird shit about Shakespeare, whereas Stephen Greenblatt is profoundly consumable and his academic work translates very, very well to his popular writing work. I'm not kidding where I say that I have seen his books in airplane kiosks before. Not every time I've flown, but at least once there has been fucking Tyrant on a shelf. I guess that leads to, okay, so let's talk about Shakespeare's
wokeness. That leads me to my million-dollar idea that I'm going to use MJ for. I don't need to be that dude. I don't even need to be the MJ of Shakespeare. I just need to be the Jared Diamond of Shakespeare.
Okay.
And I'm loving the idea of applying the Jared Diamond school of thought by basically walking in and arguing that all of Shakespeare is defined by environmental differences, which are amplified by positive feedback loops, and cultural or genetic differences are caused by separation and localities. It worked for him
where he was totally wrong about it. Why won't it work for me now?
I mean, go off, right?
you would be like the Stargate guy, you know, you have this theory. Like later, it turns out that it actually was aliens.
You know? Who was the guy who wrote Anonymous that then, I mean, before that, got recruited James Spader and Kurt Russell to go through the gate?
I don't know, number 818765 on 4chan? I don't fucking know.
No, Roland Emmerich. Roland Emmerich is the fucking guy.
Oh. The guy who made the only kaiju movie that Sean doesn't like.
Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, every single one of his things is like conspiratorial based. And because we're in a post-James Somerton universe, I want to say that I did watch the Brows Held High Shakespeare thing like 7 years ago or whenever that was published. So that summed up a lot of these, like, Shakespeare is in fact Shakespeare. But I have also read like everything written by fucking Stephen Greenblatt, including Will in the World, which is where he get all his arguments from. So whatever. Plus, I've watched more Stargate, I think, which is of critical importance when you're talking about the oeuvre of Roland Emmerich. And Godzilla, well, obviously.
So from listening to all of this, as this is where I am very much the layman, you all know that I just really like Romeo and Juliet and Shakespeare in Love. And then I also like to watch Elizabeth the First on HBO as like a companion piece and pretend that this is a part of Shakespeare in Love. But these are like the other scenes that are happening, like when they have to cut away from Gwyneth Paltrow and Raphael or Ralph Fiennes doing it. But where I was going with this though is that as the genuine true layman to this, there's an approachability issue when it comes to Shakespeare that is like strangely dwarfed by opinions on people who haven't tried to cross the approachability gulf. And they tend to come to conclusions like, oh, it's all like very highbrow stuff, or the stories are like very old and not very applicable to me. Now, we know that that's just not true. But what would you say, what would you recommend to start them on a path or journey to get a better idea of what Shakespeare is? In part so that when I argue with them, they can be new and interesting arguments.
Well, two things. One, I've looked it up and it's apparently Shakespeare was a Muromachi period writer. So that's of critical importance. Second one is
Muromachi period writer.
It was like it was a fucking weird one. I'm like, that doesn't sound like a cool Warring Kingdoms one. Why would I care about that one? I bet Tokugawa the Blood Ogre wasn't even rampaging across the land. It sucks. I think where I would start would say pick a particular play, a non-historical play, especially a comedy, and just try and read it. And if that fails, like, watch them. Like MJ said, just fucking watch Midsummer Night's Dream with Stanley Tucci. Watch any of the Hamlet productions. Don't watch the Joss Whedon one.
Not the Mel Gibson one. Don't watch the Mel Gibson Hamlet. Never again. No, stop it.
Yeah.
Just put it down. Just put it down.
You literally have a fucking, the fucking banquet is spread before you of Shakespeare adaptations. There are more Shakespeare adaptations than I think you could watch in a lifetime, especially if you're like including the fucking Russian adaptations.
And the Kurosawa, like, yeah.
Yeah. There's so many goddamn international adaptations that are like really good. And you will, again, you just won't get through the English language once. Trust me on this. And like, you can find the subject matter interesting or not, but like seeing it performed and correlating faces to what they're doing rather than just like reading it on a page dead is like far superior, especially if you're approaching it as an amateur.
That's actually eerily relatable because I tried to read Romeo and Juliet like 100 times and I could not get past literally the opening. I literally couldn't get past the part where John Leguizamo gets into a shootout with the guy from Scream.
See, I don't remember that part. I remember the part where Romeo said, "I talked to your dad and picked out a white dress." Right? Like, that's what I remember from that one.
Did you remember that Roland Trembo was taking time off from killing T-Rexes to marry Romeo and Juliet?
That rules. I love that.
And then failed to FedEx in time. Don't worry, bro. It's just a prank. Don't kill yourself or anything.
Don't kill yourself. Don't KYS. Ha ha. I know we kid, but don't KYS. Ha ha. Yeah.
But no, it's I tried to read it 1,000 times. When I got to "tis good that thou art not fish," I went,
So what the fuck? Right? Now that we all know what it means, it's so obvious, but like, when you're 12 and you're reading this and you see, like, I am not a Capulet, nor will I suffer them. And it's all like, I don't quite know what suffer them means, but I watched Lord of the Rings, so I could figure that shit out.
What's yeah, next? We can get there.
Yeah. 'Tis good that thou art not fish. Okay, you lost me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the one that got me and realized that, like, oh, wait, this is actually, hang on. Did he just say that? Is like, of Juliet's, like, incandescent thighs and the demesnes that there adjacent lie. I'm like, wait a second. Did he just say what I thought he said? And it's like, yeah, he said that. I'm like, oh, okay. So it is dumb as hell. I get this. I understand. Okay. Yes. Think on that one, listener, for what he could be talking about there. But there is one thing that I want to talk about in terms of Shakespeare. And that's that, like, Shakespeare, one of the most common things about, like, why you should read Shakespeare is he changed the English language in a big way. If you use idioms, you probably use Shakespeare. If you've ever said someone is using has taken their pound of flesh, you're using Shakespeare. And I'm like, wrong. You're doing blood libel. You're doing anti-Semitism. What you're doing is fucking.
I knew that was coming. He's like, your favorite characters in Harry Potter were all goblins.
Yeah, well, fucking yes, because the fucking thing is that, like, well, no, he's just talking about it, and, like, what's wrong with the evil banker trope? I mean, it shows up in Shakespeare. It's like, yes, it shows up in the fucking Shakespeare play named The Jew of Venice. What the fuck do you think he's talking about, right? Because this is, like, a whole thing, is that there was a huge wave of anti-Semitism raging through fucking England, especially through the monarchical courts, and you know what he was doing to fucking appeal to his boss? Oh, yeah, I'll just write some heavy fucking anti-Semitism, right? Like, literally, fucking Shylock, and referring to someone as a Shylock is anti-Semitism from the fucking anti-Semite, right? Like, this is fucking anti-Semite technology, and you're like, oh, it's just an idiom, bro, about someone, like, taking, like, an usurious amount of money. I'm like, shut the fuck up! Do you not listen to yourself? Are you not listening to yourself right now? Right? Okay, now that I've done
Yeah, but then you run into the scarier group that's all like, they'll always tell you about all the plays written about them, but they'll never tell you why. And you're like, okay, off with you. Off with you.
And yes, Merchant of Venice wasn't the original title. The original title was The Jew of Venice, and then it was changed to Merchant of Venice along the way.
Yeah, imagine being so anti-Semitic that, like, your original title has to have, like, a recut and re-release in 1586.
Mm-hmm. That's some serious Agatha Christie shit right there. Where you're like, oof. Like, 1930s America wasn't ready for the level of anti-black racism you were bringing, actually. You might want to fix that one. That's not a joke. It was, she wrote the title and it was so offensive in English that America, like, fully segregated America, was like, ooh, that's a little bit harsh, bro. I think you should wind back on that. Here, I'll change the name.
I love the idea of Agatha Christie getting a reprimand for racial insensitivity towards my constituents of color from the representative from Alabama.
Yeah. So, Shakespeare was not great on race for a lot of reasons. But Shakespeare was really, really good on gender. And this is a really dumb thing that people argue about. They mountains and rivers it because people are like, mountain one, Shakespeare was actually really pretty woke on gender. Level two, actually, women weren't allowed to act. So, like, boys being in drag was, like, not a big thing. And it wasn't, like, significant to, like, the narrative and stuff. And there's no indication of, like, gayness there. To which I'm like,
there actually is a really funny broader theory at play here of, wow, he sure writes about kissing the lead a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Marjorie, you know what my favorite Shakespeare play is, right?
I mean, The Tempest, right?
No, As You Like It.
Oh, that's true.
Could you describe the plot of As You Like It just really quick?
There is a girl who wants to get with the boy, and this boy is kind of dumb. So mm-hmm. The girl pretends Relatable. To be a guy and then pretends to be a girl. So he like to teach them how to date this really dense boy who's a wrestler.
Yes. So see, the girl is pretending to be a guy. This is a girl being played by a boy, by the way, to be clear. So she pretends to be a fucking like farmer or like lumberjack or something. Like, I'm a dude in a dude cabin. You want to hang out with me, bro guy? And then this girl is like, hey, bro guy, you don't have any game with women. I get it. How about I'll pretend to be a woman so that you can practice dating with me and you know it'll be okay because we're just bros. And you're like, okay, we're doing fucking maximum gender. We're doing more gender than Mrs. fucking Doubtfire here, right?
Well, then this, to tie it a little to your previous theory, I'm just going to posit the idea that you can take the really controversial one or you can take the slightly controversial one. You could say that he liked twinks a lot, and so he wrote a lot about women that require, like, very feminine-looking boys to play them. Or we could follow Sean's deepest, darkest accusation here and rule that Will Shakespeare was a pedophile.
Jesus. I don't think I would go to there, but I will say that, like, he... As You Like It is a really good play for gender stuff. And it basically if you ever want to see like, oh, Comedy of Errors can't be that bad. It is that bad. Go to fucking Midsummer Night's Dream. It's like the same play, but not dumb. Comedy of Errors sucks so bad.
On the question of like, is he woke or not woke? Well, let me answer a question with a question. Was he broke?
God, like, I'm just imagining like contemporary The Quartering, like to Shakespeare being like, oh, no one's going to see Richard fucking Fourth Part Two. There we fucking go. Obviously bad.
Derivative sequels and forced representation of twinks.
Yeah.
But that aside, was he woke or was he not woke? Well, okay, so unironically, need to get out of the Burger King versus McDonald's mindset and realize that there's a Wendy's out there. Yeah. And it's not like, no, this dude was okay with gays. So that means we probably agree on all sorts of economic and culture policies, right? Well, not fucking necessarily. The dude's just cool with gays. Like, for all you know, this dude is all like, he may have invented the term pound of flesh.
Yeah, he may have entered fucking blood libel into the common consensus so thoroughly that people don't even realize it's anti-Semitic anymore, even though they are literally calling people Shylocks as a representative for being a fucking greedy moneylender, right? Like, oh my fucking God. Oh my
Everybody fucking God. Is being Randall from Clerks 2.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll have to be Randall from Clerks 2. I'm taking it back. I'm taking back pound of flesh.
Is that when you go down to the Costco and get, you're like, I love my pound of flesh from the Costco. That's about what Where the Crawdads Sing is about, where Chad go gets his pound of flesh from Where the Crawdads Sing with the net.
Yeah, no.
He tried for 2 pounds, but they stopped going after a while. MJ, you are the fucking expert. You're the god. I would direct anyone who has actual Shakespeare questions at MJ. No guarantee she will answer them, especially if they're bad Hamlet essay questions. If you ask a question about Hamlet, I guarantee you she will not answer.
I mean, I can give you the link to the David Tennant and Hamlet movie, which is great and you should watch.
Yeah. But do you have anything else you want to say about Shakespeare before we head out of here?
He really did change how we talk. And, like, it is a different language that he talked in than we talk in. And so if you do want to read it, it is like learning another language. It's not as bad as, like, reading Middle English, like the Chaucer, as Chad said. He's got his whole other wacky deal over there. But, like, it is another language, and you do have it. And it's a good language to know if you want to, like, get better as an English speaker or an English writer. Like, it's cool to break down where, like, these words come from and, like, the older, like, ways that sentences could be formed is really interesting, but you really do have to like find something with notes, find somebody to help walk you through the notes, perhaps. Like, if you want to get into all the snickety like differences between editions and stuff like that, you can see like what it looked like back in the day. It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Let's practice this real fast before we let everybody go. The approachability of MJ with questions that are probably already well settled somewhere in her notes.
She has so MJ. Many notes. I'm not kidding. Like, the process of moving her notes is a fucking arduous. It's an act. It's not just the thing that happens.
Here's me slipping in the first question. Richard III possesses one of the more, I don't want to say most, one of the more iconic quotes of Shakespeare's, partially because the phrasing is hilarious when out of context. Namely, when Richard cries, a horse, my kingdom for a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't remember the exact words because I'm not English. And English people can just pull up any out-of-context Shakespeare quote at the drop of a hat for some reason.
It's part of their psychosis, yes.
Well, I think their headmasters beat them until that happens. Like, I think
that is also just part of their psychosis.
yes. So then one of his attendants walks up and goes, well, before I get to the attendant, the common reading of that is that Richard III was so trounced in battle that he's desperate for a horse to escape with. However, immediately afterwards, his buddy walks up and goes, dude, we got fucking rocked. Double-digit OTK'd is what happened. Our green health bar is a red health bar. We got to get combo. The fuck out.
Yeah.
So, I brought you a horse. You said your kingdom for a horse. Keep the kingdom. Here's a horse. Let's fucking get to Chicago on this quarter of a tank of gas and have pack of cigarettes. And King Richard III's response was, fuck off! And then he goes back to chanting. Then he says I can't remember the name of the person he was fighting. Three such and such as I've slain this day, and yet two remain. A horse, my kingdom for a horse. And then he runs off. I am taking the contrary read to what every teacher told me and saying that dude totally misunderstood him and that was supposed to be slight comic relief. And that fucking hunchback was actually in a blood craze and he was looking for a horse because that's what the fucking king is writing who he wants to go cut down. Am I right?
I mean, that's a theory. I think that with Richard III, I think that his madness is interesting and well discussed, and I think Ian McKellen does a really good job of portraying it and including that line. And I would love to like hear your response to like the Ian McKellen reading of that line.
All right, I will watch that as I lie wounded on Christmas. One thing that I find very fascinating is the historicity of that, however, because Richard III was persona non fucking grata when he wrote that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people were still like, you know, he totally Game of Thrones those two kids, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody was all like,
we found him in a parking lot. They were not Game of Thrones.
But also loving the fact that somebody's like, I don't know what two kids you're talking about, but fuck that guy.
Well, he was deeply related to the Tudor dynasty, which he was once again trying to like suck on like, Queen Elizabeth's dick there basically. Mm-hmm. And so there is all of the histories like Richard III included are written specifically to promote a political like thing that will help him advance and like live as a writer.
Well, I was just gonna say it sounded like maybe I'm mistaken. I would have thought that Richard III is somebody you don't want to touch with the 39 and a half foot pole given the way things were. But I actually don't know enough about Tudors versus Lancasters to actually have that opinion.
I mean, we generally are pretty anti-Lancaster at this point. I know that as a collective unit.
is it because there's no more lions in Lancaster?
No, it's because the rat population.
Oh, okay.
Rat population way high, right? Like that's the biggest issue. Rats and roaches and like a bad drainage district. Those are our biggest issues.
Oh, right. That Lancaster. Yeah. No, I'm all in on House of York. If I had a time machine, I'd go back and I'd kill the fucking Duke of Warwick. and then I would come out and I'd be living in the right timeline. There's no Biff Tower.
That directly correlates, right?
Yeah, there's no Lone Pine. No, it's Lone Pine Mall now, right? Like it's the good no Lancaster in sight.
Yeah, Lancasterless. But yes,
it's just a much bigger Edwards Air Force Base.
with Edwards Economic Area, yeah.
Yeah. With active F-22s and SR-71s that were never retired.
Yeah, just continually going. They would finally figure out how to strap the rocket they always tried to on the SR-71. They kept breaking off and snapping the plane in half and then getting found as UFOs. But they in that reality, Edwards Air Force Base or the greater Edwards, like, West Pacific fortification would absolutely be deploying.
I love the Edwards exclusion zone.
Yeah, the Edwards Air Force Base keeps getting bigger in our minds until it's like the whole fucking East Coast. Yeah.
Make such a better movie than Civil War, whatever the fuck is cooking up
that
there.
That looks so and shit.
The Pacific coast of Edwards Air Force Base versus the world.
Yeah, no shit. That would rock. But yes, this has been an episode. Again, if you want to talk about Shakespeare other than the authorship question, because it's like read anyone who's like a serious scholar about fucking Shakespeare.
I won't ban you, but you will get a very special tag and you'll be forced to hang out in a very special room for a while.
If you want to talk to us, the link to the Discord as well as our other socials will be in the link in the description. But there will also be a Ko-fi link, which we have used to fund a feeder dish for Meow. So we should be uploading some pictures of that at some point, I think.
And she's reacting real normal to it, I hear.
Oh, she's totally not anthropomorphizing this bowl or getting into caveman-like territorial food disputes with it.
Yeah, Meow does strongly believe in the pathetic fallacy, right? Like, all of the trees wept for Gilgamesh, and that bowl threatened Meow very greedily, right? Enkidu. The trees wept for Enkidu. That's what happened. But it would also help us out a great deal.
But he was just so tasty.
He really was. It would help us out a great deal if you could leave a positive review for this episode. Maybe share with a friend who's interested about Shakespeare or who will not shut the fuck up about the authorship question. We will beat them with that in that special room that Chad talked about. I wasn't supposed to mention. So I'll bleep all of those out. But above all else, we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.